because I didn't know Pastor Paul. I have pored over that video several times, trying to know him a little bit of the way you did. And what I see in that video is images of a man deeply at home. At home in this place, at home with himself, with the people he loved, and with his God. And so, the sermon, this whole service, we do in honor and memory of Pastor Paul. Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts honor you, God. Honor our friend Paul. And please you on this day. Amen. One of the turning points in my life, one of those moments that I think of almost as a conversion moment, came at a memorial service that I attended while I was still practicing law. I didn't have any official role in that service. I wasn't even a churchgoer at that point in my life. I didn't really think of the person who had died as a friend, even. But he was someone who had been on the other side of several cases that I had worked on as a lawyer. His name was Rick Renton, and he lived in a small East Bay town called Moraga, which just happened to be the town that I had grown up in. His office was in Oakland, just like mine. In fact, it was on another floor in the same building. And we had recently had a big construction case together. And what I thought about Rick from my experience with him was that he wasn't a particularly great lawyer. He was okay, but he was a plodder, the kind of lawyer whose value to his client seemed like his willingness to slog through thousands of documents for some telling but small bit of evidence. I never knew him to make any particularly insightful legal argument or to do a brilliant cross-examination. In a competitive business and at a competitive time in my life, being one of the best lawyers around was really important to me. And so, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I was not very impressed with Rick Renton. Rick died young in the crash of a private airplane, a plane that he was flying to a court hearing up in the very northern part of California. At the memorial service at his church, there were a lot, maybe a couple hundred, lawyers who knew Rick. His partners and his family and friends spoke. And here's what I noticed at that service. No one said one thing about what kind of lawyer Rick Renton was. What they talked about was what he loved to do when he wasn't working, and how he made other people feel about themselves, and what kind of father he was. And here's the story that made the biggest impact on me. One of Rick's law partners told it. He said that one November morning, the day after Election Day, he was reading the local newspaper in Moraga, where he also lived. And to his surprise, he saw Rick Renton's name in the election results. Rick had run for city council and lost badly. And when this guy went to work that day, he saw Rick and he said, "Why didn't you tell your partners in the law firm that you were running for public office? We would have come out and helped you, and we could have at least given you a better chance at winning." And Rick said to him, "I wasn't running to win. I was running so that every weekend I could take my 9-year-old son out with me to knock on doors and introduce myself to our neighbors as a candidate for city council. I wanted my son to know that he lives in a country where anyone can do that. I was blown away by that story, sort of knocked off my feet by the fact that while I was out worrying about winning cases that I can't even remember now, Rick was out there doing something important with his life, something that had nothing to do with what I thought of as success, but something that was important, valuable, life-giving. In some way that I'm not even sure now I could fully articulate, Rick's story became a sort of gospel story to me. A story that wasn't directed at me at all, but that pointed back to my life. A story with the power to turn me upside down for a moment so that I could see the world and myself in a different way than I had been able to before. Jesus was a master at telling stories that did that. It's what his stories still can do if we can get past that sort of numbness that comes with having heard those stories many times before. And the passage that Sherry read this morning from the Gospel of Matthew is one of those stories. Now, its placement in the book of Matthew is important because it's the very last thing that Matthew tells us before he takes the turn into talking about Jesus's trial and death and resurrection. So it's like Matthew is saying to his readers, if you forget everything else, remember this. And Jesus couched his words with the same gravity. When everything else is finished, Jesus said, when the last word is written on life, when there is finally a judgment about who has chosen to live in God's way and who has not, when you're done arguing about what's the right belief for getting into heaven and what is not, here's what will matter. The people who I will know have chosen to live with me are the ones who gave me food when I was hungry, who gave me a drink of water when I was thirsty, who welcomed me when I was a stranger. They gave me clothes when I was naked, took care of me when I was sick. They didn't forget me when I was in the hospital, and they stayed with me even when I was in prison. Jesus must have known how startling this was for people to hear because he just kept talking. I know, he said, you're saying, wait a minute, we never saw you hungry or thirsty or naked. I'm sure you were probably sick sometime, but I wasn't even there. And sure as heck, you never were in jail. People like you don't go to jail. And Jesus went right on. Every time you did it to someone else, he said, someone who was overlooked or ignored, someone you didn't recognize as anyone important, you did it to me. Now, maybe you've heard that story so many times that it doesn't surprise you, but listen to what he's really saying. Serving someone else is serving God. Giving something to another person who needs something, whether it's by handing them a plate of food or taking their temperature when they're sick or comforting when they're worried. Showing up for someone who is hard to be with, maybe stuck in a prison of depression or pessimism or stubbornly unhealthy behavior. Each of those things is all by itself, an interaction, a touching with God. Jesus was saying, you don't rise up into a spiritual state out of your everyday life where you're bumping elbows with other people. You don't lift yourself out of messy situations to find meaning in your life. You go down right into them. Always, Jesus said, you find God in the humblest, most basic needs, in the responsibilities that seemed like they were only weighing you down, in opportunities to do something small to make this life a little easier for someone else. Do you want to find God? That's how you do it. You don't wait for a different life that has God in it. You see that this life is full of opportunities to touch holiness in that person right in front of you. It's not complicated. It's just different from what we thought. So different that it might turn the way you see the world upside down and backwards. And it's supposed to. Earlier in his teaching life, Jesus had said something similar. Some devout religious people came to him and asked, "What's the greatest commandment?" Now, we're so used to thinking about the Ten Commandments as rules for civil society that we can miss the import of that question. But for Jews, there were not just 10 commandments, there were hundreds of them. And following those commandments was what got you closer to God. You approached God by doing what the commandments said. So when they asked, "What is the greatest commandment?" they were really asking, "What's the thing we can do that matters most to God?" Jesus answered first, just as they would have expected him to, with the mantra that they had heard all their lives, recited in church every week: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul." And they thought he would stop there. Yeah, they would have thought, just like we would think. And they would go away and attend to their prayers and sacrifices just as they always had. But Jesus didn't stop there. "And there's another commandment," he said, "just as important as the first one. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." We've heard those two commandments paired for so long that it's hard for us to capture what a shocking thing it was for him to say this. The faithful Jews had always thought that pleasing God, what we might think of as what is necessary to get you into heaven, meant removing yourself from the rabble of everyday things, attending to matters of the temple, devoting yourself to prayer and sacred readings, you know, the things God thinks about. Nope, Jesus said, loving other people in the same every moment, every place ways you take care of yourself. That is just as important to God as directing your attention to religious practice. Maybe he was saying that God is best loved indirectly, sideways, honored when we are in the act of loving God's people. Maybe those two commandments are actually one commandment. Maybe Jesus was saying, the way you love God is to love God's creation. It took me many more years and several more turning points in my life before I realized that what that moment at Rick Renton's funeral stirred in me was my longing for an experience of God. I think now that sometimes, often even, our feeling of a need to do something for someone else, to be in service, or to do something that we think of as meaningful work, is in fact the same thing as our need for an experience of God. We need both those things, to serve others and to experience God. The difference is that we are culturally encouraged to do volunteer work. But sometimes people in our lives get uncomfortable if we go around talking about wanting to see Jesus. But still, I think we have this persistent yearning that drives us toward this truth, that we find God when we go out of our way to serve other people. You know this already. Every year we hear from our youth at the end of the summer when they've gone out on a mission trip and they talk about their experience as the time they felt closest to God or got something about faith in a way they had never internalized in years of Sunday school. Sometimes we think that what is asked of us is something heroic or world-changing, or at least away from home. But maybe Jesus was saying that the work of small things is even more important. It takes humility to make a commitment to keep carrying water and bread, to keep pouring energy into something where our efforts might never be visible or even recognized, to keep loving someone who might not change in the way we would hope for them. But maybe it's the act itself, however small, that opens a space for God's presence in the world, or at least in us. Maybe Jesus had us in mind when he said, "When you did it for someone else, you did it for me." Amen.